Is flock safety eavesdropping on private citizens? In this case, this flock raven is literally under the eave of a private residence. How close? I'm now touching the sill of this house, standing next to the raven.
The community center said, okay, well, we're a little worried that there might be some sort of anti-Semitic attack, so we want to share our footage with police in case they need it, in case there's a shooting or something terrible happens. And by doing that, they shared it with Flock. All Flock employees, over 1,000 times, and they were all grown men. And they were looking at these cameras at the daycare center, the children's gymnastics room. And their defense to this was that it was a product demo for another client. And I'm thinking to myself, if I had a business and I wanted a Flock camera by the police department and somebody pulled up a laptop and said, look how good this works, and then it was a children's gymnastics room, I would call the police, or hit them. I'm not sure what I would do, but that's an outrageous explanation. That's just delusional.
How many Flock employees were fired after that?
None. Not one.
If they're going to track us, that's against our constitutional rights. You know, I have the right to move about this country free without somebody looking over my shoulder constantly.
Flock Safety's solar-powered license plate readers have blanketed America like a digital dragnet, scanning tens of billions of plates a month, feeding hot lists to cops and private HOAs, and turning every street corner into a permanent checkpoint. The backlash is real. Dozens of cities have ditched the contracts after privacy scandals.
For many, Flock cameras are supposed to make communities safer. But after three officers allegedly abused the system for personal reasons, some residents are questioning whether the technology has enough safeguards.
If they're able to use it for all these other reasons, like tracking people, either they need a new company that has protections on the gear to where you can't do all that stuff, or there needs to be some checks and balances on it.
False alerts that put innocent drivers at gunpoint.
Turn, get out on the ground, do it now. You're going to get bit. Man, for real? Man, you're back.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he's already asking for medical like a little petulant child.
So it's not the plate. Well, it's not the stolen plate.
No. Did it just miss hit?
I think it miss hit.
How you make that door like?
We'll talk later.
Hey, face away from me now!
Right now, man, we got a hit on a car and a stolen vehicle. So you're about to cooperate with us?
I'll cooperate, but I promise you, it's not so.
You have any weapons on you?
No.
Turn around. I got to put you in these for right now, okay?
I've got a baby in the car.
So we have a Flock camera system that's around these distances. We got a hit from that Flock camera.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so L0DUY, not LODUY.
Unauthorized federal data grabs and that creeping sense that your every commute is being logged for the permanent record.
Well, guys, Flock just got wings. Those street-side cameras that are already all across America. What if I told you they're not stopping there? The same company behind the cameras are now putting autonomous surveillance drones in the sky. And depending on who you ask, it's either the future of public safety or the more likely option, the biggest expansion of government surveillance we've seen yet. Now the company's automated license plate readers have spread across the country, creating one of the nation's largest interconnected video surveillance networks. After partnering with aviation software company Aerodome, Flock launched Flock Alpha, an autonomous police drone built to respond to emergencies before officers even arrive. The drone sits inside a waterproof docking station waiting for a call, and when a 911 report comes in, the drone can launch automatically and fly up to 60 miles per hour. Officers don't even have to be standing nearby. They can deploy it directly from one of these little things, a smartphone. And this thing isn't just flying overhead. It's got thermal imaging, high-definition cameras, and powerful optical zoom. And while according to Flock, it can even read a vehicle's license plate from 2,000 feet away. That's not terrifying at all.
But instead of the surveillance layer being torn down, it's being rebranded. Axon, the taser and body cam giant, has stormed into the gap with its own pole-mounted and streetlight retrofit ALPR systems, the same hardware partners Flock used.
Guess who else owns Axon? That's right. According to financial disclosures, the president purchased between $1 and $5 million of Axon stock.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy
1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
News, analysis, reports. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Sweet dreams are made of these. Who am I to disagree?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today, though he may be popping back in from time to time as he just can't, the man can't take a break. Man cannot go on vacation, but how could you at a time like this when everything seems to be coming to a head and the future of the world is being decided right before us? Of course, you just saw that great video from John Bowne that, of course, is on X, and you can find and share it on any of our accounts. Of course, at AJ and Live, I'm at Harrison H. Smith, follow at Real Alex Jones. And of course, you can go to alexjoneslive.com to find all of the feeds as well. We have just a ton of news still to get to today on all the topics that Alex has mentioned and more. And, you know, on the topic of Sweta, however you pronounce it, I believe it's Sweta. That's how I'm going to say it, at least. I thought this post by, which I guess is Banksy? I don't know if this is the artist Banksy or not, but on X, I guess it's a Spanish guy. 800 years to drive them out. 12 hours to get them back. I think that sort of sums it up, doesn't it? The Spanish spent 800 years doing the Reconquista, winning back their land foot by foot, sword fight by sword fight. 800 years to drive out the Muslims, 12 hours for them to rush back in. And there were rumors, and I haven't really seemed to confirmed, I have not seen it confirmed anywhere, but there were rumors that the Moroccan president basically released around 3,000 criminals out of his jails, and those were at least a part of the massive crowd that stormed into Ceuta. And yes, as Alex pointed out, they're still there. They're actually like setting up their own ad hoc government, basically, where, you know, the more political migrants are basically, you know, organizing gangs and running around assaulting people. Again, we've got video after video of the Spanish people there basically just being like, what the hell is going on? You know, videos of people trapped inside buildings and not able to leave because of the mobs of rioters outside and the Spanish authorities doing absolutely nothing to stop it. But then you have pictures like this. Morocco literally emptied out its jails, released all of its rapists and murderers, put them in trucks and dropped them off in Spain. And from one of the broadcasts, you can actually see, if we go to DotCam here, and actually if you want to pull up the actual tweet, you can see it a lot better than in the printed version. But this guy, his arms are covered in scars because he's been whipped, an arm full of whip marks from being in some Moroccan jail for who knows what aberrations, but they'll send it to you as a poor migrant boy. And so, yeah, some of these people are not just, you know, literal criminals, but they bear the scars of the, you know, physical punishment they've been subjected to for whatever horrific crime they've committed against people in their home country. Now they are recruited as soldiers against Spain. Again, we know that this is from the beginning, a exercise of Israeli imperialism, really, in a lot of ways, basically pressuring it. And we explained this on Friday, but just to reiterate, essentially, this is a diplomatic pressure move. These Spanish enclaves, exclaves, they call them, where you have Spanish possessions in Africa, which again, Not that doesn't mean colonialism necessarily, unless you want to say, you know, Alaska actually belongs to the Russians because we colonized it. Yeah, there you can see the scars even better. Yeah. But it's these, you know, Spanish enclaves that have been Spanish for, you know, out of living memory. And yet, you know, Morocco wants them. They want to take them. They want to at least be able to send migrants there. It is a diplomatic situation for Spain and has been for a while, but it was never really in danger. It never really, like the Spanish, it was never a hot button issue that the Spanish government had to, you know, spend resources dealing with. It wasn't really an issue. It was just like there were some Moroccans that wanted it back and there was kind of nothing they could do to get it. Then Spain refused to, you know, allow America to use its bases and also criticize Israel's ongoing genocide against Gaza. And so to get them to stop doing that, they looked around and they said, okay, let's find a pressure point that we can press. Let's find a vulnerability that the Spanish government has that we can sort of lean on and press and, you know, apply pressure to. So then we can turn around and go, oh, you don't want us to flood your country with all these migrants? Well, then why don't you stop calling out Israel's genocide? Why don't you allow us to use your bases? Then this whole problem can go away. So it wasn't exactly manufactured from whole cloth by Israel. It's not like Israel came up with this idea to try to go after these enclaves, these exclaves of Malila, however you pronounce it, and Ceuta, however you pronounce that. They didn't create the problem, but they are exacerbating it. They are creating a diplomatic crisis so that they can lean on them and say, well, we can help you clean this up. We can help you fix this up. You just have to do what we want. And what they really want is Spain to be actively involved in the military action in the Middle East. Because if Spain is actively involved, if they're providing weapons and providing launching platforms for attacks to go on, then they have no standing to bring cases against Israel in the International Criminal Court or to back up places like South Africa that were, you know, claiming that they were committing a genocide and brought them to that international court, which is what happened last year. Earlier this year, Spain was actually one of the nations that was on the side of South Africa in trying to use the international rules-based order to bring Israel to heel. This is no small part what is behind America then using our incredible power, our incredible leverage, our incredible wealth for the benefit of Israel to force Spain to give them concessions diplomatically. So it's a little bit more complicated than just it's the Jews. Like I see a lot of people on X just sort of boiling it down to the, you know, elementary and therefore not correct view of just like, it's just Jews sending Muslims to Europe like they always do. Which, okay, there's a little bit of truth. There's a little bit of truth to that. There's a very, very large amount of truth to that. But it is only in context of much larger, you know, various forms of warfare going on. It fits in to the worldwide attack that's now happening. In fact, there was a senator, I believe, commenting on the situation and saying, you know, America shouldn't, and he was right, and he's, you know, reflecting a criticism of the Trump administration's activity when it comes to Morocco. And he's saying, you know, basically, it's not right that the American government is helping a non-Western country take over a Western country. And my response to that is, well, what's he talking about? Is he talking about America pressuring Spain to give up its territory to Morocco? Or is he talking about America pressuring Lebanon to give up its terrain to Israel? Because when you actually look at the fundamental, foundational, the moral underpinnings of these nations, Israel is no more or less alien to the West than Islam is. And like you, this to me is the thing to really understand, is this whole concept of Israel being the West is manufactured, created on purpose by Israelis to trick Westerners into fighting for them. Like it's really not all that complicated. It's just a lie. It's just an abject lie. And you can tell how abject and ridiculous this lie is because the talking points coming out of the Israeli Hasbara, you know, think tanks, they're, you know, brilliant rhetoric practicers, is basically completely contradictory and incoherent. They're saying that Israel is the West. It's the front lines of the West. It embodies the West just as much, if not more at this point, than places like England does, right? England, sure, it's the birthplace of everything that we've come to recognize as the West, but, you know, it's basically been taken over by Muslims now. So really, Israel is the front line. Israel is the West, and it embodies the West. At the same time, they tell you that Europe has a history replete with anti-Semitism. And how many times have you heard some variation of the claim anti-Semitism is in their DNA? I mean, that's like a common refrain, is that like there's something about the European DNA that it just has this poison, this defect that can be suppressed if you're, you know, brutal and you know, efficient enough in controlling communications. You can suppress that cancer at the heart of the European soul. But if you don't, you know, crack down on it enough, then it bubbles up and it's meaningless. It's pointless. It has no, you know, basis in reality. It's just some sort of a DNA defect that is expressed in the European people. Now, you tell me how Europe, i.e. the West, i.e. Christendom, can simultaneously find its greatest expression in Israel, but also be tainted forever, poisoned, every aspect of it with an ingrained, inbuilt, congenital anti-Semitism. This is nonsense. It makes no sense. This is ridiculous. How could both of these things be true? They can't. So what is the fact? The fact is neither one of them is true. The fact is Israel is not the West. It does not behave like the West, does not have the same morals or character as the West, does not have the same beliefs as the quote unquote West in any way, shape or form. The West doesn't believe in collective punishment. The West doesn't believe punishing the children for the sins of the father. The West believes in a contained, a sort of national warfare where two nations go to war with each other and then they sign peace agreements and then they get back to some stability, you know, between, if not allies, at least not open enemies. Israel believes in an ongoing, perpetual, forever war against anybody it doesn't actively control. When you really boil down what it is to be the West, it's Christendom. And that's what it used to be called. And again, I can't help but see a little bit of a psyop in all of these words, right? I remember being a little kid and hearing the word Caucasian and being like, what the hell does that mean? Where is Caucasus? Where the hell? It's a mountain range. Okay, so Asians are from Asia. Africa is full of Africans, but Europe is full of Caucasians. What the hell is that supposed to be? No, it's Europeans. They're European. But you've got to understand how for a century or more, there have been these little linguistic tricks, these little, you know, rhetorical manipulations that go on, little seeds planted that might not, you know, might not be overwhelming at first, right? To hear European people referred to as Caucasian doesn't automatically make you think that the people of Europe never existed and that their nationalism is a lie. But over time, that's the idea that's seeded, that these people, the Caucasians, they must be sort of uprooted. They're all from like some mountainous region in Eastern Europe, but somehow they spread everywhere. No, they're European. It's not that complicated. Just like the West, it doesn't mean the West. It means the people of Europe, which used to be called Christendom because Christianity is tied, you know, indissolubly to the European character. It was Europe that adopted Christianity and spread Christianity. Sure, it started in the Middle East, but even back then, the Middle East was, you know, demographically a very different place than it is now, as Alex was pointing out. I mean, it's not a joke. And people can take this too far, and they can take it to sort of the like Nazi level, whatever they call like social evolution, whatever it is, where, you know, basically the appearance of white people in ancient cultures was seen as some sort of evidence of, you know, race mastery or whatever else. But, you know, putting that to the side, putting the uncomfortable conclusions to the side, this is one of the things I talked about when it came to something like the Odyssey. The Spartans were known for being blonde-haired. Like, you look at the vases, and it's a bunch of blonde-haired ladies running around. That's what they were famous for. Just like the Spaniards were blonde hair and red-haired, blue-eyed, just like the Northern Europeans, especially, you know, after the influx of the Germans after the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, do you know that Ramses the Great was a white guy? Like, do people know that the greatest pharaoh of all time, Ramses the Great, like, they have his mummy? It's not speculation. It's not like they're looking at ancient carvings and trying to divine the racial makeup. We've got his preserved body. He's got red hair. They've tested it. He's a Western European person. So again, this idea, the the reason I say this again is because there's a concerted, deliberate, decades-long effort to basically eradicate white people, not just in their homelands, but throughout history, so that you could claim that everything, you know, Western Europe accomplished was somehow stolen from people that weren't white, in order to give rise to and give credit to and justification for the anti-white activity of people who are trying to destroy us, which, again, I'm glad that people are waking up to their, like, we've gone through steps, right? When I was growing up, it was anathema. It was shocking and horrible to even question the government line. I mean, even in people now, like people who I know who are, heck, even maybe farther than me down the conspiracy rabbit hole, like growing up, you know, if you said 9/11 was an inside job, you were like politely asked to leave. Like, it was not a good thing to even question the government, you know, let alone believe that they were in fact the progenitors and the people who started all of these horrible things. Merely questioning it was bad enough. Now, luckily, and thanks in no small part to Donald Trump shattering the, you know, illusion of mainstream media objectivity or anything else, people realize, they learn, they come around to the fact that the government lies to them, that they're tricked into states of panic. Now, whether people can actually, you know, absorb that and then turn that into, you know, I remember being shocked at the time. We just lived through Russiagate and all the crap that we'd been through with President Trump. And then COVID hits, and I'm expecting everybody to go, this is another one of those tricks. We've been through these before. We saw Russiagate. We saw 9/11. We saw all this crap get sold to us. We're not falling for it again. But of course, people fall for it again, because of course, that's the beauty of a false flag attack. The only thing false about it is the flag. The attack is real. You have to actually defend against it. So in the case of Ceuta or the wider Muslim invasion of Europe, it's like, okay, you can point out that it's NGOs that are orchestrating it, that the wars that were started for the sake of Israel are the whole reason that these huge populations of quote unquote refugees exist in the first place. You can describe the ignition of this process. You still have to stop the Muslims coming in. You still have to stop the people that are in Europe from arming themselves or gaining political power and enforcing their beliefs on an unwilling populace. You can't just point to the people in the NGOs that sent them over. You have to deal with the problem on the ground. This, again, is the, from the perpetrators, beauty of false flags attack. The attack is real. People have to respond to it. You just then get to manipulate and decide where that response goes and how that response is enacted. Again, I could tie this to things like the flock cameras, problem, reaction, solution. They open the border. They defund the police. They inject racialism into our jury pool so that, you know, people are let off. So you have a corresponding rise in crime. We presented the chart last week that showed, you know, all the big cities in Texas. Austin alone has had our homicide rate increase 74%, while every other big city in Texas has seen their city decrease its homicide rate in the exact same time period. Why? Because the choices made by the, trying not to say retarded, but I'm blanking on any other word, so I'll just say socialist leadership of Austin, the choices they made lead directly to a rise in crime. What's the solution to that? How about permanent perpetual surveillance cameras on every corner? Why would we need that? Why would that be necessary? The problem is that you destroyed the judicial system, that you destroyed and, you know, demoralized the police, that you allowed George Soros to spend millions of dollars to plant a DA who refuses to charge minority populations with the crimes they commit. That's the problem. The solution is fixing that. The solution is not creating a digital panopticon that surveils you 24/7 so that we can just have, what, high definition footage of the crimes that keep getting committed. Like, that's essentially where we're headed. Is you're going to have flock cameras on every corner. You're going to have fully realized three-dimensional surveillance of every square foot of your city. And the criminals that are running around beating people over the head with baseball bats or stabbing people on the subway trains are still going to be let out time and time again. They're still going to have rap sheets 45 cases long, because it was never a question of finding evidence to convict them. It's been a question for the last decade of the systems in place to bring about justice being used instead to serve racial justice or social justice, which are not justice, in the same way that turkey bacon ain't bacon. You can call it that, but it's something entirely different. And justice is when a criminal is punished for the crime they commit. Racial justice is when you don't punish that criminal because 200 years ago, somebody that looks kind of like him was maybe mistreated by somebody that looks kind of like his victim. This is absurd, but this is the world that we're entering into. And I'm going to cover that a lot today, too, because you thought Ma'am Donnie was bad. Good Lord, folks, I don't know what we do at this point. I've got a video of the mayor of Seattle almost breaking into tears as she's questioned about her choices by the media there. There's a woman running for governor of Michigan or something who is just long story short, there are like young socialist revolutionaries who have never had a job, who don't have families, who have never been in charge of anything in their lives, who are literally actors and actresses, just like AOC. If you remember, AOC was chosen, was selected out of a lineup like an actress trying for a part. I'm sorry, let me correct that. She was an actress trying for, not like one. She was literally a bartender who just looked pretty and could spout the socialist talking points. And she did so unashamedly. Like in interviews early on in her career, they would say, what do you think about this? She'd go, I don't know. I've never thought about that. I'll have to ask my people what our stance is on that. It's like, okay, so you're just an empty vessel. You're just an empty vessel that somebody decided could win an election. So they put a little bow on your head and are feeding you talking points through your earpiece. That's our modern politics. And it wouldn't be an issue if we didn't flood our country with tens of millions of people that aren't American and don't have the same beliefs we do, who see voting as just robbery with one step removed. I'm going to vote for the person that promises to rob the other people and feed me rather than rob me and feed the other people. Like, that's how they perceive elections. And again, folks, you've got to see this for what it is. You've got to be able to recognize that other populations, people see it as a criticism because they inherently recognize that our system is superior. So when I talk about our differences between our system and other systems, it's obvious, even in the people who think I'm bad for pointing it out, the deficiencies in their systems, but they still defend them. But this is just the fact. And we've played the videos, we've shown, I mean, it's everywhere because they're not shy about it. People in India, if they want to get elected, they drive around in cars throwing cash out the windows. There's nothing wrong with that to them. To us, we would see that as just, cynical buying of votes, just like betraying the idea of democracy when you're just running around going, hey, vote for me, I'll give you $100. We would see that as, a violation of the underpinning of our entire system, that this is not the way this is supposed to work. This is corruption manifest. But to people overseas, it's like, well, that guy gave me the most money. He's obviously the one who's going to be best at being in charge. If he is the one with the most money, if he's the one that is most able to benefit me, then why would I not vote for him? Like, I've had these conversations with people where I'm like, you get that it's bad that your politicians just hand out cash in exchange for money. And they're like, why? Why? You don't get paid for your vote. I do get paid for mine. Who's the real sucker here? Okay, that's a difference in mindset that is insurmountable. When you bring those people over and they vote in that same way, it literally destroys our system. Or you have people that are literally just too dumb and incapable to understand second order effects. And so they're electing literal children. We basically might as well have like 8-year-olds running our country. I'm not even exaggerating. I'll show you clips on the other side. This Wong woman in Michigan is literally insane. It's like been to the mental hospital a whole bunch. She's running for governor. The mayor in Seattle, I'll show you that as well. Stay tuned. We're being taken over by children.
I'll tell you something right now that is one of the most, if not the most important things I've ever talked about on air. And I want you to really listen to me. And I want you to get a pen and paper out of your iPhone, out of your Droid, and type this into your notes. And I want you at lunch today or tonight or right now to just go to any search engine you want and type in two different names, two different words, okay? Two different drugs that have won Nobel Prizes, you name it, that people don't want you to know about. And one of those is ivermectin that everybody knows about. The other one that most people still don't know about is Mabenzidol. If you do the research, then it's important to understand that you need to get it from a pharmacy. You need to get it from a doctor. And we have a sponsor, and that's, of course, Bigly. And they went and they used the same service as, the big web, RXs, and great people we've used that have been sponsors in the past. But this is Bigly doing it. And the key is it's real, it's pharmaceutical, and it is a very low price. People are selling knockoffs of it online without a prescription, and a lot of it's fake or a lot of it's watered down and adulterated. Because I did a regimen a couple years ago of mebendazole. We'll put that on screen. That's how you spell it right there. M-E-B-E-N-D-A-Z-O-L-E. And it didn't have any effect. I bought it off of Amazon. And then I did more research. And they said most of that stuff's fake. So I went and I got it from a doctor. And it was incredible. And my own medical doctor owns clinics all over the state of Texas. Had already been pushing it on me for years. And I just never done it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get the two in a combo. The ivermectin and the mebendazole together. And they work synergistically together. It is certified and known, both of them, as incredible anti-parasite. Just search the term ivermectin, mebendazole, and just put in study and do your own research and see what the system has been suppressing about this. And this is something, in my view, talk to your physician. And when you go to the website, it's, you know, online pharmacy, and they've got nurses, doctors, all of it. And then you get the prescription. It's very, very easy to do. And I would recommend to talk to your doctors. My own personal opinion. What I do for myself is twice a year, I take a regimen of ivermectin and mebendazole. And it is incredible. People ask why I look so young while I'm healthy. Well, it's a cocktail of things. It's the ivermectin. It's the mebendazole that I take about twice a year as a regimen. Some people, my medical doctor says, take a little bit of ivermectin every week. But I tend to forget to do that. He's literally just says take like two pills a week as a supplemental. That's what my medical doctor tells me. You get your own medical doctor to tell you what you want. But the big thing they say is a couple of times a year, a big dose, a big regimen. You talk to your physicians. You talk to the folks in the online pharmacy. Let me put it on screen for you. 1776RX, just 1776RX.health. This is one of the most important things you'll ever do, ladies and gentlemen. And despite the system trying to suppress this information, it's getting out everywhere. So do your own research. This is revolutionary. This is so important. 1776, just the numbers. 1776RX.health. Those are the coordinates. And it's a win-win to fund our operation and what we're doing. Take action now. The most important decision you'll ever make. 1776RX.health. And get your ivermectin, mebendazole right now, ladies and gentlemen. But whatever you do, go to the alexshowstore.com. These are incredible products. All these things work. They don't have sexy names. IRCMOS, Shilajit, bovine colostrum. Oh, research bovine colostrum and then find out we have the best. Oh, research IRCMOS. We have the best. Research Shilajit. We have the best. We just bring you things the bad guys don't want you to know about at thealexshowstore.com and, of course, at 1776RX.health. Take action now. Thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. We'll be joined next hour by Larry Sanger. He's one of the co-founders of Wikipedia. Talk to him about sort of what I was hinting at in the last segment. What do you do? What do you do when your population doesn't care about being taken over? When your fellow Americans with a vote that counts equal to yours genuinely lacks the intellectual capability to even understand the choices that they're making? That does actually seem to be the situation that's happening here. And I've got a couple of examples to show you, both the damage already being done and the damage to come. That is the socialist idiot children that are being elected to high offices in America already wreaking havoc on the states and cities that they're in charge of. But also the people still running for this, as the DSA is on an upswing at this point and is increasing its popularity. And with every race it wins, it, you know, is able to take that and make hay with it and tell everybody how successful it is. It's, you know, this is the way Democratic politics works. You can take your victories and spin them into more victories by putting out the idea that, you know, your ideas are popular. It brings more people over. I mean, this really is a popularity contest at the end of the day. and they've rigged the system by making everyone stupid. I really think they've made everyone too stupid for us to be a democracy anymore. I think that's it. I think, like, if you really want to get down to the issue, if you had a smart, informed, you know, well-read population that understood not just the laws that are in place, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but the reason behind those, which, again, I think we've failed in this. People know that we have freedom of speech. Do you know why? People will invoke the Fifth Amendment. Do you know why it exists and for what reason it was created? Because it sure as hell wasn't created so a government agent could get away with using his authority and power in the government to destroy the lives of American people. But that's exactly how it was invoked last week with Anthony Fauci. This, you know, it was about stopping the overreach of the government. It was about preventing a situation where the government was imprisoning people just because they didn't like their points of view, or, you know, forcing them to give evidence against themselves in show trials because they had seen that in places like England. And we still see it today in places like America. It hasn't done a perfect job of correcting everything, but there was a reason that it was put in place. Now, to use that protection from the citizens against the government is now using it for protection of the crimes it committed against the people. This is all wrong. This is all completely wrong. So what do you do when you have a population that doesn't care about the truth, that doesn't care about what's right? Because, you know, Fauci might be the best preeminent, you know, most shocking example. As I keep saying, we didn't fall for the lies. Why are the people that fell for his lies the ones defending him? It doesn't make any sense. And this never really made sense. I guess these people have a part of their brain that I'm missing or something. The sheep part, whatever the sheep part of the brain is. But I was having this conversation back in 2022, 2023, because people were like so confused at why I was criticizing Fauci, and I was so confused at why they were defending Fauci. Who the hell is this guy? What is he, your dad? Like, why are you so defensive of him? He's just some dude. He's some government bureaucrat. You have no loyalty to him. You've never heard of this guy before 2 days ago. But all of a sudden, it's like, I'm a bad person. I'm an evil person for daring to point out this guy is lying. It's crazy. It has been crazy for a while. The loyalty, the like worship that they show towards Anthony Fauci, it's senseless. It's unmoored. It's no sense. There's no sense in it, actually. But this has been the case for a while. It's like Anthony Fauci was lying. We were pointing it out and people were just like, how dare you? He is an amazing public servant that's trying everything he can to save lives. And it's like, why do you think that? What evidence is there that that's the case? Genuinely, what the hell is wrong with you people? You're defending a man who used your loyalty to him, your trust in him, to screw you knowingly. He didn't do it, better safe than sorry, right? That was always the excuse of like, hey, look, you know, the lockdowns may have had negative consequences, but at the time, you know, at the time, we didn't know what we were dealing with. We had to do it because, hey, what if it was like as dangerous as, you know, aerosoled Ebola and it would kill 90% of people who got it? We didn't know. So better safe than sorry. We had to lock down. And sure, if we could go back now with a time machine, maybe we wouldn't have. But at the time, it was the right choice. No, it was never the right choice. He lied to you. He lied. He knew exactly how deadly it was. He went on TV and said it was 10 times as deadly because he wanted to create fear in you to take advantage of you. And these people who fell for the lies, who now can't help but acknowledge that they were lies, and yet they still call you a bad person for criticizing Dr. Anthony Fauci. This, again, just goes into this poisonous mindset that is at this moment hollowing out America like a cancer, replacing all of the healthy functional cells with cancerous ones. From Zero Hedge, is anybody ever going to say I'm sorry? I'm not even going to read the art. Let me answer. No, the answer is no. Here's the cool thing about justice. You don't need them to say they're sorry. This is, again, what I don't understand. We operate at a status that's like we have to have them say they're sorry. Why do we have to have them? You know what will make them sorry is when they're sitting in a jail cell. They'll be really sorry once they are put in a jail cell. And guess what? You don't have to wait for them to say they're sorry before you do that. This genuinely blows my mind, because even just the title of this, is anybody ever going to say they're sorry? No, they're not. That's the answer. You ever watch cop shows? You ever watch like Cops or any sort of like true crime stuff on YouTube. Do the criminals ever apologize? Is there ever a moment, ever, in any of these cases? I mean, you can have somebody, they're like on video murdering somebody. They're caught so bad. They go to trial. They try to represent themselves. It's humiliation upon humiliation. Literally nobody in the world thinks this person is innocent. Nobody in the world. Even their own lawyers are like, I'm just doing a job here, buddy. Nobody believes them. And yet, do they apologize? Do they go, look, fine, all right. You know, I really tried to get away with it, but you guys are sharp and you caught me really good. You caught me really bad. And I'm sorry. I feel stupid now. They never, ever, that is not in the human, like if they're the type of person that will do that, then they're not the type of person to commit the murder or to carry on the worldwide scheme to enslave humanity. The people that we're dealing with are criminals. They're not going to say they're sorry, and we shouldn't expect them to, and we don't have to wait for them to say they're sorry. You make them sorry by punishing them. Hello? Hello? This is called civilization. This is how it's always worked. You don't wait for the criminals to say they're sorry, because they never will. It blows my mind. This week, Dr. Anthony Fauci appeared before Congress and, on the advice of his attorney, repeatedly invoked the Fifth Amendment rather than answering many of the senator's questions. Everyone's talking about what he did or didn't know, whether he misled Congress, whether he should have answered the questions, or whether he should be held accountable. But that wasn't the moment from this week I can't stop thinking about. My husband called me as he was driving home from picking up grain for the hogs. He had stopped at Restaurant Depot to grab pizza boxes and a few supplies for the ranch. Rarely does he pay attention to American politics. Rarely is he interested in the stories that consume him. He simply asked, what's going on with Fauci? I explained that he'd spent some of the hearing invoking the Fifth Amendment rather than answering the senator's questions. There was a long pause. Then he asked me something that caught me completely off guard. Is anybody ever going to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, it cost you and your family everything? No. It's never going to happen. It doesn't need to happen. I feel like there are a few certain things that, you know, there's a question that went semi-viral on X that I've just been thinking about, and it put it as like, you know, if you could have access to the emergency signal system on people's phones, you know, if you had 1 minute, you could make everybody in America listen to like 1 minute of audio. What would that audio be? What would, you know, to change the world to whatever it would be? The couple things I think we all need to understand to fully comprehend. One is white people are the target, that white people are slated for eradication, and that you're not a good person to allow this to happen. That being attacked does not make you a good person. To be a sucker and a victim is not a virtue. I really wish people would get that in their heads, because it is an inverted, bizarro form of white supremacy where non-white people can be flooding into your country by the millions going, we are going to kill you. We're going to cut your throat. We are going to take you over. We are going to destroy you. And white people look at it and go, oh, they need help. Oh, no, we'll be fine. What, defend ourselves from these people? We don't need to do that. We need to give them whatever we have, because, you know, they clearly don't know what's going on. It's like, what the hell is wrong? What, you think you're invincible? You think you're a god? You think you're immortal? You think this can't affect you? You think you're just, things are going to be great forever because you're white? Like, get over yourselves. You're under attack. That'd be the first thing that I wish I could just hammer into people's heads. White people especially, you are under attack. What the hell is wrong with you? Because it wouldn't be an issue if white people would just not allow themselves to be taken over. But regardless, and this is what I was talking about in the last segment, where it's like we've taken these steps, right? People understand now the government will lie to you. People understand the government will actually be engaged in like horrible crimes against you and get away with it. Something that was anathema, that was unspeakable 15, 20 years ago, is now readily accepted by almost everybody you could possibly meet. I'm not supposed to. Let's just keep it vague here and point out that nobody these days is being sued for questioning the supposed grief of people who've had their family members die in public ways. Nobody's getting sued for saying we don't believe their grief. This looks a little bit fake to us. Nobody's getting sued for that these days. Here, 14 years after other incidents, which we're not able to be questioned so much. Like, people are questioning things. People recognize now there's nothing wrong with questioning things. There's nothing wrong with investigating the truth behind claims of the government. Great. That's a great step. The next step is recognizing that all of these attacks have exactly the same character, the same motivation, and the same outcome, destruction of white people. That we got to get over, because everything I deal with is false dichotomies. Everything I deal with is you're either for Muslim or you're for Israel. You either are an egalitarian, self-hating, you know, white person that wants the global majority to overwhelm and destroy Europeans, or you are a literal Nazi that wants to step on the neck of every non-white person to prove your superiority. It's like, how about we don't have to be insane? How about every stance everybody takes is always insane these days? What if we had a sane approach that was just like, white people don't deserve to die, and also don't have like a civilizational obligation to be in charge of everything all the time? How about we're just like everybody else? Would that be a stance that everybody could come along with? No, obviously not. You either have to be a Nazi or you have to be AOC. This is ridiculous. You have to be Mamdani or you have to be Adolf Hitler. Why is this constantly the dichotomy? It is okay, in fact, to be white. It's actually great. And you should be proud of yourself. But that's just one. That's one thing I wish people to understand. The other thing I really, 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 really wish that we could get across, especially to Republicans and libertarians especially, is liberty requires peace. Okay? You're not at liberty if you're under threat. Okay? I pointed this out last year. One of the great things Trump actually did in his second administration was sending federal police forces into places like Atlanta and Memphis, where the crime was astronomical and not being dealt with. So the feds went in and just arrested the criminals they knew were out there, knew where they were, just weren't arresting them. The feds actually did arrest them. And you had videos of people in Memphis saying, this is amazing. The streets are so safe. My children can now play in our own backyard without having me, you know, fear that they're going to get shot. It's like, okay, if you can't play in your own backyard, are you free? If you can't walk down to the corner store after dusk and purchase something and walk back, if you can't send your kid to the corner store, pick up some, you know, an ingredient you need for dinner without just thinking there's a 50% chance kid just never comes back again, are you free? Are you a free person? Of course not. So freedom, liberty requires peace. Peace requires order. Order requires good people, good men, to do violence to bad people. Okay? Again, and this is why I'm going off on this when it comes to, like, why is nobody apologizing? Because they're bad people that are evil and have to be defeated. Like, it's not that complicated. It should go like this. You did something bad. We all know it. You know it. Will you apologize? If they're like, oh, well, I just think that, then you just go, okay, into the cage. Goodbye. Goodbye. Into the cage now. Into the concrete box forever. We're done with you. You can't live here anymore. We need decent people who are honest to run a country, and you're incompatible with that. So you go away now forever. That's the solution. The solution is not to beg them to admit that they did something wrong, or to have a really powerful speech about how they did something wrong while they smirk at you knowing that they're getting away with it. This isn't solving anything. Solving something would be throwing them in prison forever because of the crimes we know they committed. Why can't we just, let's do that, okay? No, we have to ask and we have to beg them to admit what they did wrong. Then and only then can we actually get justice. Ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And then you get to something like this from today. Scientists, the experts, the scientists, say we need to have the Earth's population to just 4 billion to save the planet. Okay, so they're just coming right out with it now. They want to kill half the planet. They're saying for the planet to survive, you know, the giant ball of rock in space, that's going to die if we don't kill half of the people on it, according to them. Of course, what do you think their suggestions are? Do you think it has anything to do with maybe no longer providing sustenance to nations that have birth rates in the, you know, 700%, like every woman gives birth to like 7 to 9 children on average, but their GDP is $2 a year. Do you want to stop feeding them? No, absolutely not. I'm a horrible person for even suggesting it. Okay, then what's your suggestion? Kill the productive people in the first world countries? Why is that better? How could that possibly be better? Here's an idea. What if we applied sort of the same idea of representation to human survival that we do to like Hollywood films. In other words, you know, white people are only like 7% of the planet. So what if white people have absolute protection from any form of, you know, enforced deaths? Everybody else has to be degraded till we're all equal, till white people and everybody else are exactly the same percentage. Wouldn't that be fair? Is that fair? Because we want total equality, right? Across the races, across the nationalities? Of course not. It might sound like the evil plan of a nefarious villain, but scientists say we now need to have Earth's population to save the planet. It might literally be the plot of like every incredibly popular piece of media recently, with the likes of Thanos just straight up word for word having this position. But scientists believe it now. Like, that doesn't actually discredit it at all. Like that but should like qualify the first part, right? I might seem like a crazy person running around the parking lot screaming, but that guy's coming after me with a knife. Okay, well, now that first part, which did make you sound crazy, is qualified by that second part, which makes the first part sound okay again. So something like this would be, scientists say we need to have the Earth's planet to 4 billion to save the planet, but that's because if we don't do that, the population will be reduced to less than 1 billion. You know, then maybe you can make an argument. They're not even making that argument. They're like, sure, it sounds like Darth Vader himself and the Emperor got together to come up with the most evil plan of all time, but we think it's a good plan. What? That's not a qualifier. That doesn't change the first part of the sentence. You're just saying, yeah, this is evil, but we want to do it, though. But actually, we're evil, too. So there's that. Over the past 100 years, the population has ballooned from less than 2 billion to 8.3 billion people. However, researchers say our planet cannot sustain this explosive growth for much longer. Now, in a proposal that will remind movie fans of Thanos' plot in Avengers: Infinity War, scientists argue that the population needs to be eased down to 4 billion by 2200, by 2200. I don't even know how to say that year. I just, you know, I guess I'm glad they're coming out and saying it now. I just think we should believe them when they say this. You know, it's kind of like what Alex was saying about the flock cameras. Yes, the flock cameras didn't exist when Trump was elected. Like, as of Election Day, November 2024, there wasn't a single flock camera on the streets of America. Since then, they've exploded everywhere. They're being rolled out faster than you could ever cut them down, right? That's just happening. People don't want it, but it is happening, just like the data centers. Nobody wants the data centers in their backyard. The data centers aren't necessary, but they want, but the people in power want them. So they're happening, and they're being funded by your tax dollars, and your life is inconsequential. The effects it has on your life are not an area of concern for the people building these things. But it didn't start with this. It started with things like Ring cameras and Amazon creating a, you know, government portal so that police departments could have direct access to lifetime feeds of every Ring camera. We reported on this at the time. So, I mean, they didn't start with flock cameras. They started with, hey, here's a really convenient doorbell camera that will keep your family safe. Oh, look, it turns out we accidentally built the digital panopticon. We better add license plate readers and signal readers to that as well, so we can track your every move. Again, just think, why would these things be necessary? They're not necessary to deal with crime. You saw that in places like El Salvador that went from having the worst murder rate in the world to one of the best violent crime rates in the world. They did it without flock cameras. They did it by getting rid of the judges that kept letting criminals out. That's what we need to do to, you know, get rid of all of the illegal immigrants. I have stats here that I'll find in just a second about Operation Wetback in the 1950s, the biggest deportation effort. I was going to say up till now, but no, it's still bigger. It was still bigger in the 1950s. And the entire budget for that operation, they got over a million people out. It was like 700 people and 35 trucks. It was like not a lot of people. Right now, ICE has like 200,000 employees. And we're deporting less than they did in the 1950s. It's not a matter of we don't have the flock cameras. It's not a matter of we don't have the panopticon surveillance grid necessary to do this. It's not necessary. We could do it. They're choosing not to. And then they're using the problem that they're choosing not to solve as an excuse to build another problem that they're going to use against us. It's, again, really just not complicated, even in the slightest. And we're going to talk about all this and more as we continue, especially as we talk to Larry Sanger in the next hour. But when it comes to the illegal immigrants, sticking on that for a minute, it's the idea of ICE. 900,000 legal immigrants have been naturalized over the last 12 months, while fewer than 800,000 illegal immigrants have been deported since Trump took office. Now, add that to the stat that we learned last week, that there have been more anchor babies born in the United States than deportations. There have been more anchor babies born in America than deportations since Trump got into office. So it's like you just take one of these, more anchor babies born than deportations, we're at a net negative for America, net positive for immigration. Then you compound that with the fact that there have been more naturalized legal citizens than deportations. And it's like deportations are not only not happening fast enough, insufficient to deal with the problem, we're actually still growing an illegal and illegal immigrant population. We're not even close to that being a negative flow. The people in power could easily fix this. I mean, do you guys remember how easy it was for Trump to close the border? Something else that, like, it just sort of happened. Nobody, like, comments or focuses on it. But for 4 years, we were told that the border couldn't be closed, that we needed to pass a bill. They were blaming Trump, saying Trump argued against this bill. If that bill passed, then they would have shut down the border. He shut down the border in one day. You know what he did? He went, shut the border. And then it was shut. Literally everything we deal with is that simple. Everything. Deport illegal immigrants. They would be deported. Shut the border. It would be shut. We're choosing not to. And we're not taking the obvious, you know, easy way to do any of this stuff. We instead are choosing to be lost, to be drowning in this whirlpool of chaos and misery when the solution is right in front of us. Instead, we're being told the solution is what? Socialism. It's got to be communism, right? I mean, things are so bad. Communism's got to be the only answer, right? How about we just try for once enforcing existing law? It's the only thing America needs to exist. Enforce existing law. Everything would be solved.
Planet Earth, filter your water. Stop turning my frog friends gay. This I command.
The Alex Jones Store.com. Fight the globalist takeover now.
A scarlet martini before breakfast? You minx. Are you trying to outdo me in corruption? Or shall we make it a team effort?
Of course not, darling. This is Methylene Red from the AlexJonesStore.com.
The Ultra Methylene Red, madame. Bold, refined, and unapologetically potent. It optimizes cellular energy at the deepest level, delivers razor-sharp cognition, and ignites a warm, invigorating rush that spread through every vein.
This sword has tasted blood, and it will taste more.
Attack!
Ah!
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.